Welcome to CounselorAudioSource.net. Counselor Audio Source is a weekly podcast dedicated to the professional enhancement of practicing counselors, supervisors, and counselor educators. Look for us on the web at CounselorAudioSource.net. This week on Counselor Audio Source, contributing editor Dr. Michael L. Baltimore interviews Dr. Dan Rose, Counseling Center Director at Columbus State University, on the topic of dreams. This podcast is an account of Dr. Rose's experience in using dreams to help clients and counselors in training.
Today's topic is about dreams. We want to talk and have a discussion about dream analysis and the use of dreams and the importance of dreams. And we want to have that conversation go into depth in terms of how students might use dreams in their work with clients, counselors in training, and how counselors might make a use of dreams to further their understanding of what's going on with clients. So it's my pleasure to have Dr. Rose. Dr. Rose, thank you for coming here today.
Glad to be here.
It's an interesting topic, this notion of dream analysis, very much Freudian-based, generally speaking. And I'm curious if you could tell us a little bit about your interest in dreams. How did you become interested, and when were you first introduced into this topic of using dreams in counseling?
I guess probably my main reason to be interested is because I'm a victim of dreams myself. I have them all the time. And one of the reasons I wanted to become a psychologist is because there was a lot of phenomena that happened to me on a day-to-day basis that I wanted to have some understanding of. So they're things that happened with me, and I wanted to know more about them.
So in your training, you have a doctorate in psychology, and in your training, was there content in coursework, or was this something after your training that you pursued?
I pursued some postdoctoral work in psychoanalytic training, wherein dream analysis certainly was a part of that. It's also part of in various different classes I had. Had some training in gestalt analysis of dreams, existential dream work, that sort of stuff. But by and large, I think probably the biggest basis would be sort of the psychodynamic, psychoanalytic exploration of dreams.
Okay, so much more of a psychodynamic model to use the dreams. Mm-hmm. Obviously, dreams have meaning. Can you define the term dream analysis and where that comes from, and what does that mean?
Probably the earliest would be Freud himself. His interpretation of dreams, published around the turn of the century, was sort of his first foray into sort of coming up with a comprehensive model of how the mind works. And he used the dreams as an example of how the mind works. So, like, to him, dreams sort of show us how we actually think in a way. So a very cognitive model.
Very interesting. Now, is there a stigma that is associated with dream work? I mean, just how accepted is the use of dreams in counseling and mental health?
Well, I think there are a couple of things that sort of go against it, I think, is that first off, it's often thought of as esoteric. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit frou-frou, so therefore what sort of direct application does it have in work? I think also there is a number of individuals probably would think that they wouldn't have the expertise to do the sort of work that when a client brings in a dream. I think we often have this feeling that we're supposed to be the expert here, and having somebody bring in a freaky dream and you having no clue what to do with it, nothing makes you want to run out of the room faster than that. So I think that there is also just a natural tendency to be afraid of dreams because of that expert role that you're called upon to be.
Right, and there can be so many abstract ideas or thoughts or events that occur in a dream that it's hard to understand at a first listen. So what type of training does one need to use dreams in counseling work? Mm-hmm.
I think the first most important training is you have to be a human being. And first and foremost, you have to have that. Everything else is sort of secondary. I think that we have the way in which we deal with anything that a client brings in, to some degree, those skills are going to be used in dream work. If a client comes in and tells you they're depressed, or if a client comes in and says, I'm anxious but I don't know why, all the sort of skills that you might bring to bear in any of those sorts of instances are some of the basic skills you're going to be doing with when you do dream work.
Okay. So what do dreams tell us about ourselves? As if you say that it takes us only being human to have dreams and to begin to use those dreams, what are these dreams telling us, generally speaking? What are they telling us about ourselves?
It's interesting because in cognitive psychology circles, probably the dominant paradigm is one by Hobson. I think it's called the activation synthesis model. And Hobson would have us say think that dreams are sort of neurological froth, which means that when we go to sleep, our brain randomly fires, and the content to dreams aren't important, that we just sort of, it's the random firing of what happens when you sleep. Now, slowly but surely, that model, he himself has begun to really reevaluate this, because there's more and more indication, first off, that there are more than just REM dreaming. There are a significant number of dreams are non-REM. And that makes sense, because how many times can you remember being dreaming where you just fall asleep and suddenly you start dreaming? Well, that can't be REM. You don't fall into REM sleep that fast normally. You dream lots of... And what he would often say is that in REM sleep, there seems to be less higher brain functioning involved in those activities. But in non-REM sleep, we show... There are a number of cognitive activities available, and when we look at that functional MRI and whatnot. So there are a long way to answer your question is the assumption would be the dreams do have meaning. Current research seems to suggest that there probably is meaning to at least some, if maybe not most, dreams, and that the idea that it is simply random neurological firing probably is going to go out with the dinosaurs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So if we're dreaming every night, so how do dreams help us resolve our everyday problems? If these dreams have meaning for us, they must have some significance in our lives to help us resolve problems. Is that what's going on? Does it help us resolve problems?
Well, think of conceptualized dreaming is to say that dreaming is a form of cognition. In fact, it may be the dominant form of cognition. Conscious processing may be just the tip of the iceberg. So most of cognition is below the iceberg. And probably the sort of thinking that we see occurring in dreams is probably reflective of what we do throughout the day that we just don't notice. So one way to think of dreams is a window into the way we actually think. And that's sort of Freud's take on things. I think there's some burgeoning research to sort of support that. Regardless, I think one way to conceptualize, and again, it's a theoretical position, but I think it has some remarkable utility, is to say that when we dream, we are thinking and digesting the events of the day. One way to think of dreams is that the ones you remember are sort of a form of emotional indigestion. You can think of from your standard dream, it's just a little spicy, to the nightmare where you got too much Tabasco sauce. And what happens is the events that you experience, no matter how subtle they may have been throughout the day, when you go to sleep, those things are being processed, digested as they were. And, you can think of in a standard day how many emotionally significant events that occur to you. And they can be as subtle as you're driving along and out of the corner of your eye you see a car that vaguely reminds you of your ex-girlfriend's car, which you may not even register consciously, but you register it on some level. And it clicks in motion a whole series of things, affective and cognitive experiences, to something significant like you go to your physics class and you've got an F on a paper. Either one of those sorts of things may give you something to chew on when you go to sleep at night. And the dream work is the actual cognitive processing of digesting it and making some use of it if you can.
So something that helps us understand what has happened to us during the day. Now, I also assume that the dreams might be about our future. So those events may trigger something that may have us project on into the future.
It could be. Certainly, anytime there's a cognitive process involved, anticipatory events could, that could be the focus. Often, the things that you worry about, For instance, take the subtle example of seeing your girlfriend's car, ex-girlfriend's car, out of the corner of your eye. What if you've been broken up with this girlfriend for a number of years and you're in the process of thinking about marriage with your current girlfriend? Seeing that car may remind you of things that you miss in your current relationship, and you may begin to feel some concern on some level about what the level of your current relationship and what would happen if you make that next level of commitment. And that would all be triggered by just simply seeing something, and it's a subtle event that you don't consciously register.
Okay. Now, a moment ago, you mentioned nightmares. So what are nightmares telling us? What are they about?
I think nightmares typically, in my experience, and again, I think there's some research to support this, they tend to be very emotionally significant. Think of a nightmare as something very, very spicy. If a dream is triggered by an emotionally significant event prior to going to sleep, if you have a nightmare, then it must be a significant emotional event. It must be something that that is really hard for you to process and digest.
Okay. Now, also along those lines of nightmares, there's also night terrors, which is mostly associated with children who are coming in for counseling or psychotherapy. What are nightmares about, especially as it connects with children?
You know, there's
night terrors.
There's some interesting research, and the name of the researcher escapes me. I believe the book, and I reviewed this for a publication a while back, was actually called Nightmares in Children. And there's some significant research looking into the content of childhood nightmares and, again, what sort of function they may have. I think that when you think of a nightmare in a child, it's important to remember that you're dealing with someone who is neurologically immature. There's a development, so when you say child, the difference in a 16-year-old's nightmare and a nightmare of a 6-year-old is going to be quite different, and it's going to serve a different cognitive purpose. I think some of what children experience as nightmares have a lot to do with what they're in the process of their development, developing a sense of security, that sort of thing. If I'm not mistaken, the research that I'm familiar with, and certainly the way that I do some work with kids, and if a child brings in a nightmare to me, I still handle it, though, the way I would handle is if an adult brought a nightmare into me. It becomes the child brings a story that they have yet to understand. And I'm hoping in the process of the two of us talking, we can begin to understand it together. And when the child brings a nightmare in, they often experience it as if this is something that has happened to me, something that I've experienced that feels out of control. In the process of talking with them about it, I want to get them to be able to have some understanding of what's happened to them, to understand that this is actually something they created. They have some control and power over this. And it's also something they can use. It tells them something about what they might want to think about and what they might want to do.
Okay. So how would you typically, as you began to talk about the use of that with children, how would you typically use dreams in psychotherapy? Where do you start in that process to make use of dream in the counseling work?
Well, first off, I mean, there's a sort of a joke in this. The clients are always bringing dreams to me. And I was thinking, how come they're always... Then I realized there's this this poster, frame poster above my chair that says Dreamwork 2000 and sort of mentions the anniversary of Freud's book, Interpretation of Dreams. And I suspect they see that poster and they automatically sort of assume that I probably would want to hear about their dreams. But people spontaneously bring dreams in. In fact, in some ways, it's a testimony to the therapeutic relationship. I mean, we usually tell our dreams to people that we trust. And if you're creating the sort of relationship where one can discuss all sorts of things, whether it's as a therapist or as a spouse or as a friend, it's a testimony that you're doing something right and building that relationship with people who are bringing these in. So first and foremost, it says to me that this is someone who wants to do some work. And if someone brings a dream in, and this is very, very important, one of the things that that drives me a little nuts are these dream interpretation books that you see in the grocery stores where you walk in and you pick the book up, and if you have a dream of a snake, you flip through the pages and it says snake, tells you what it means.
Right.
That stuff drives me nuts. I'll tell you why. Because what's very important, I want the person who's telling me their dream to use their own dream interpretation book. All of us have our own book that we pull from. I want to be able to get them to talk about it and feel safe. And if they have a dream about a snake, let's talk about snakes. Let's talk about the history they have of snakes. Let's take each individual component of that dream and talk about it. Think of a dream as sort of a zip file. And the more we talk, the more we expand. And the more you expand the dream, the more it begins to make some sense. The first 5 minutes someone tells me a dream, I got no clue. But usually after 30 minutes of talking about it, it expands and suddenly you can begin to see something thematic. You can begin to see some sense of what it's about. And once we do that, we also try to get a sense of what the trigger was. So if someone had a dream of a snake, and it means this and this, and we find out what that trigger was, that, you know, what they may have been thinking or feeling before they went to bed, or what may have happened to them, it gives you a clear indication of what's on their mind, how they're thinking about it, and more importantly, what they might be able to do to solve it.
So that might be connected to something that is very important that they are working on. They may work through, and your job may be to connect that dream with something significant in their lives. Therefore, you want to know more about the connections, experiences, et cetera, with those issues. Well, I want to ask you more about how you might help a counselor in training, someone who is an intern or those working in the field, to use their client's dreams. As a supervisor, I think we probably both have interns who are coming in saying, my client brought this dream in. So where do you start with that in helping counselors in training use dreams?
I think first off is to as best they can, stay away from being paralyzed by that expert role. Inevitably, when a supervisee comes in and they say, a client brought a dream in and they wanted me to tell them what it meant, and they get this deer in the headlights look like, oh my God, what am I supposed to do with this? I think first and foremost is to avoid that sort of experience. Okay. A dream is something that you should play with. What I want them to do is just get the patient, the client, to talk. If an example would be if someone came in and they had a dream that... a dream that I had last night, for instance. I had a dream that I went back to my the apartment I had as an undergraduate, and I had to go back to this apartment, and I had to clean it out because we were finally getting rid of it. And I said to myself, man, we've had this apartment a long time. And I went and I noticed that all my old roommate's stuff was there, you know. So now if I brought that in to you and said, what do you think, what does that dream mean? Your first response would be like, I haven't got a clue. That's what is that? What am I supposed to do with it? That's a good response. You shouldn't know what to do because you don't. But the person who had the dream does. You just have to be able to slowly but surely get them to be able to talk about it. And if I brought that dream in, what I would hope that you would do is you might say things like, maybe some simple leading questions like, wow, you know, this apartment, you know, tell me about the apartment you used to have with your roommate. Tell me about your roommate. What was he like? What happened? Now, what was going on in this time in your life? And the more people talk and talk and talk, and then you can begin to, once they've expanded on it, then you begin to say to them, well, now, tell me a little about what's going on now in your life. I mean, like, why would you have that dream now? And if you were telling me about that, you know, I would talk to you about how I might say things like, you know, I was an undergraduate then. I didn't have a lot of responsibility. The room that I was cleaning out was a mess. We had stuff piled everywhere. It was there. And as you're talking, I said, I still don't really understand this dream. Well, what do you got going on now? And I might say something, well, I have a one-year-old son who hasn't been sleeping well lately, and I haven't been getting a lot of sleep. And then you might think something like, well, I wonder. And then you could sort of offer this as a possibility. Well, do you think you might have had that dream because you're feeling the crush of responsibility of a child that isn't sleeping, and maybe in some way you're dreaming of that old apartment, and you said you were getting rid of it. So maybe in some ways this reflects a realization that you can't go back. You're giving up the possibility of ever being a post-adolescent with no responsibility. Now, if you said that, and if I was like, wow, you know, I think you may be right, it's still not enough. You take it that next step, and you say, well, what do you think you need to do? Because this is causing you some indigestion. Something too spicy about this. What do you got to do to make this more digestible? And you might say things like, well, you know, are you feeling a little too overstressed? Is there, are you working a little too hard? Is there need to be some balance here? I mean, is there a way to bring that apartment back a little bit? Mm-hmm. And then from there you could do maybe some problem solving about how to deal directly with the sort of things that may be giving you anxiety.
Okay. So you can actually take that that conversation, go more in depth with it, come out with something that the client actually needs to work on in the current context, and maybe even put together a plan.
You could be, this could work with any theoretical modality. I mean, I'm psychodynamic, but you could be cognitive behavioral. You could be, because, you know, once you get someone to talk about this, you can come up with a strategy. You could begin to say, well, you know, let's talk about you doing this, 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 and this. Or you can make, you could be directive, non-directive, whatever the case you want to be. What I think is very important is these are the sort of skills that if you have some understanding or grasp of, they can really make a therapy session move quicker. You can get much quicker to the root of things if you're able to be able to know where to look. And once you look, to be able to, you know, to make use with what you find. It doesn't have to be psychodynamic. It could be used by anybody.
Okay, that's very interesting. You said it something at the very first that stuck with me about making sure that those counselors in training, those supervisees that we may have, do not get stuck in that moment of being the expert and having to know something, interpret mm-hmm. material mm-hmm. in a moment's notice without really having the background and the foundation for knowing what's going on with the client. Well, we happen to have a video of you working mm-hmm. with an intern talking about a dream, and I'd like for you to take a look at that now, and then let's come back after that and talk a little bit about what went on in that session. Is that okay?
Sounds good.
All right, good.
What are you bringing in today?
Well, actually, I have a new case. I have a new client that I've been seeing just a couple of weeks. She came in and she shared a dream with me. Not quite sure what this dream means, so need a little help from you. Client comes in, she tells me that her boyfriend of 10 years is in the dream, and along with herself. And they're running across this field chasing a rabbit, and it seems to go on forever and ever, and then she wakes up.
Wow, she wakes up. So it makes her anxious and nervous enough, wakes her up, can't catch this rabbit.
Exactly, exactly.
And you said boyfriend of 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Now, we got a lot of good symbols in this room. We got a rabbit being chased. We got a big, endless green field.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is, does it seem like the fact that they've been dating 10 years is somehow connected to some of this?
I thought so. It seemed like it could be that, you know, she's talked marriage. It's come up, but I'm not quite sure where it's going. And I think that's kind of a parallel thing going on. She's not sure where this is going.
Now, so we have some of the symbols. Mm-hmm. What about the trigger of the dream? Because is there anything that's significant that she's anticipating or that she was thinking about before she went to bed?
Well, actually, this is kind of a happy time for her because her boyfriend has been deployed. He's in the military and has been deployed for a year.
Oh.
And he's coming back this weekend. That's something that's going on in her life right now.
Well, let's step back and sort of like add up what you said so far, because I think it's an important dream, especially if it was important that it was made her anxious enough to wake her up.
Mm-hmm.
So let's think about this. He's coming back, and he's about to come back after being gone for a year, and they've dated for quite some time. Mm-hmm. I wonder if, in some respects, this doesn't reflect a lot of anxiety she has about the relationship in general. I mean, I wonder what sort of commitment issues there might be in this relationship. I wonder if him coming back doesn't stir up a thing or two about what she expects in the future.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be surprised if that rabbit didn't have something to do with maybe a child. Or maybe just in the idea of marriage and family in general. And maybe this is something they've been chasing for 10 years. That does seem like a long time.
Yeah, 10 years is a long time, and she is seeming pretty anxious about a lot of things surrounding his return.
One thing I might suggest is she may not be completely realize how anxious she is.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing I might suggest is if this is causing her this sort of anxiety when she sleeps, after the initial coming home, it sounds like she's got some important things to discuss with him. And maybe, too, something you and her can talk about. If she herself has some problems with a commitment, or if maybe she hasn't vocalized as much as she needs to some of her wants and needs, and I would wonder what might be keeping her from being able to say that.
That's something that I think we can talk about in this session coming up.
All right, so that was an interesting video. So the counselor in training was bringing in the client's dream to you, and you were helping the counselor begin to work with the client about that. Mm-hmm. What did you notice as you watched that video of you with the counselor in training and supervision?
Well, one thing, because of the brevity and we had to accomplish that, I was a lot more directive. One of the things that I would do with the counselor in training is I would try to model what I would want the counselor in training to do with the patient by sort of doing it with a counselor in training. I think I would have been just, you know, allowing us to speak and talk and just allow some time to sort of think and talk about the dream and then move a little later toward making, you know, an active use of the dream. But it sort of gives sort of a condensed version of the sort of way to approach it.
So one of the things I noticed is that you were helping the counselor in training, the intern there, make a connection between what was going on with the dream and what might possibly be going on in the life of the client and their expectations. Mm-hmm. And this was a 10-year relationship, and then there was no marriage and so forth. So that might have indicated their need to commit to the relationship, or as you said, perhaps might be a child involved in that or some other issue for them to talk about. As you look back, what might you have said that maybe didn't occur at the time as you watched that video?
Well, I think I would have hoped that I could have gotten the counselor in training to make that connection as opposed to me. Just like there's an old saying in psychodynamic circles that the interpretation that the patient gives themselves is 10 times more than the therapist can give to the patient. And what that means is in the same encounter in training, if I can help someone to come to that on their own, that's much more important. I just wouldn't have been as directive as I was in that event.
Well, now, turning to another question about dreams, you said earlier that everyone dreams, but it seems that not everyone can remember their dreams. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned REM sleep and some other phases of the sleep sequence at night. Let me ask first, though, is it possible to never have a dream?
Yeah, people dream. And you, the research shows when they do a lot of the sleep research, and one, I think you have anywhere from 16 to 32 dreams a night, something like that. So there's a significant number. What often happens is, and again, this is a theoretical position, but one way to look at it theoretically is, if the dream work is doing what it's supposed to do, and you're chewing on the events of the day, you probably shouldn't remember them. But the dreams that wake you up are the ones that are a little too spicy, the ones that require a little extra effort to digest. So probably, if you're not remembering too many dreams, it could be a sign that the dream work is working. You're chewing on what you need to chew on.
Okay.
It could also mean, because I have people come in all the time and say, I never dream. Now, that could be, again, that, you know, not everybody is obsessively analytical about things, or they sort of navel gaze all the time, so therefore they are less likely to notice these things. I find, though, that most people, once you begin to ask them about the dreams, suddenly start having them. If you begin to start focusing and thinking about it, you begin to pick up more and more about what you're dreaming. And if you really want to get, you know, to start really remembering your dreams, you take a pad and paper with a pencil and set it next to your bed. And every time you dream, you write these things down. And after a while, you sort of train yourself to remember your dreams. Because I'm sort of, that's something I enjoy, I usually remember a dream or two a night. And when I wake up in the morning, I allow myself to stay in bed just a few minutes extra, and I think about the dream. I sort of go over it in my head, and I allow myself to sort of think it and feel it, and then I try to draw some connections between the dream that I had and what's going on in my life. And I try to see if I can allow that wiser part of myself to be able to guide me in some of the decisions that I make, that I might be a little smarter if I listen to my guts, especially when my guts are telling me a story that was important enough to stick in my head.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things you were saying was to increase this ability to remember dreams was to keep a pad and pencil there so that people can actively write those things down. Because at times it seems like that you remember only just a few moments in a dream, and as time goes on,
it just slips out of your hands. Yeah, that happens. That, in fact, you can remember a dream, and by the middle of the day, it's completely gone. You have some vague recollection. Another way to do this is, if you have somebody in your life that you really love and trust, make it a point for the two of you to share dreams. When my wife and I were separated, when I took the job down here and she was still finishing up her internship, we would email our dreams to each other every morning. And I think that was just a valuable experience to be able to tell each other what's on our mind. And it also made me remember my dreams more and vice versa. You really should carve out a place in your day or in your week where you sit down with someone and discuss dreams.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, I really appreciate our discussion today about the use of dreams. Let me ask you, what are the essential ideas that you would have our listeners today take with them about dreams, about dream work, about working with clients who are bringing in their dreams?
First, I would remember that you are not the expert. The client is the expert. They have their own dream book, and you want to be able to get them to open that book just by getting them to talk. In psychodynamic circles, we call that free associate. Just a matter of get them to speak. Think about the symbols in a dream. Those are the things you kind of want the client to talk about. Also think about the trigger. Once you've gotten someone to talk a good bit about a dream, the next phase is to be able to see if they can link it with something in the here and now, something in the present that might be on their mind, particularly something that would happen to them before they went to bed. And then, fourth and final, do something with a dream. See if you can tie the discussion that you had and the connection with the trigger into something they might be able to do with the dream they had. Let the dream inform them, and maybe they can make some decisions based on a better, fuller understanding of their emotional life.
Well, Dr. Rose, thank you so much today for taking time out of your busy day to talk with us about dream analysis and working with dreams. It's been very informative, and thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You've just heard an interview of Dr. Dan Rose, Counseling Center Director at Columbus State University, on the topic of dreams. Look for previous podcasts, show notes, and listener feedback on the podcast website at counselorsource.net. Listeners can leave comments or questions for our interview guests or hosts through our Skype.com internet telephone ID, Counselor Audio Source, or by calling 330-871-4242. Counseling techniques and interventions discussed in the Counselor Audio Source broadcast are meant for use by counseling professionals, and Counselor Audio Source is not held liable for any use of the techniques mentioned in the program. Our music bed today is Memorial Day from Jamie Beauchamp. His and other PodSafe music can be found in the PodSafe Music Network at podshow.com. Counselor Audio Source is licensed under the Creative Commons, a nonprofit organization offering a flexible copyright for creative work.